All right. Welcome to everyone. We are so glad you are here. This conference has been a long time coming. My name is Christy Cole, and I am on staff at Grace Church in curriculum development. I've been here for 5 years, 4 or 5 years, I think. And we are just very, very excited to have you here. I do want to say that our volunteers have been working very diligently for a long time now to put this conference on. And there are over 100 women that have served to make sure that this place was prepared and ready for you. And so they have been praying for you. And we are, even as you were entering the building tonight, the team was there and praying for you as you came in. So we are so grateful that you are here, and we are grateful to our volunteers who have worked so hard to prepare this for us. As Kim mentioned, we have 857 chairs in the room, and I see very few that are free, so we have a full house, and we are really excited because as we watched the registrations come in, we saw that we had 7 different states represented, coming from Florida, Alabama, Virginia, North Carolina, Georgia, and then, of course, we had South Carolina represented as well, and over 60, I think, different churches in attendance, and that number was rising. So what was so neat to us is that we are coming from a bunch of different places, but we are all the body of Christ coming together in this one place, and we are all on level playing ground. And so as you came in, maybe you felt a little bit out of place. Maybe you don't know anybody. Maybe you, as you were walking in the door, thought, well, nobody really looks like me here. But we are all on level playing ground here. And so we are so glad that you are here. And we'll go ahead and kind of just give you a little bit of an idea of where we're going for the weekend before we kind of get started. We started thinking about body during our sexuality study two Decembers ago when we were studying for our sexuality conference that many of you were here for. And we knew in that moment that that was going to be an important topic for us to discuss. And so we started thinking about this last year, really focusing on it in December, and have been having countless meetings since then to prepare and to see if we can really start to untangle the mass of confusion that we have around this topic. So what we've done is we started meeting with all of you. We had focus groups where over 120 women from our church came and participated in some conversations with us. We put out a survey that many of you filled out. We had 260 of you to respond in that survey and share how you feel and your struggles with your own body. And we have had countless meetings with therapists, with doctors, with just everyday women who are struggling with matters of the body. And so much of what we are doing here tonight, you guys have shaped and formed. You are the ones who have helped us to develop this curriculum. So we are very grateful for those of you who have participated in those with us, and so we're glad that you're here. Our goal for this weekend is not to solve this problem, because Virginia and I have realized probably in a much more clear way how huge this issue is for so many women.
Christy, can I say something?
Yes.
When you get to this subject, you're in a mess. It is messy. And I want to speak for both of us. I think I'm free to. We're in the mess, too. Mm-hmm. We're at different stages of life. We're good friends. But the issues go back. We're going to try to get to some core issues in starting this journey. But just know that we are speaking from a place of personal entangled body issues. Mm-hmm. I've just had a little longer to do it than you, Christy. So that's what we're asking you to do, is join us in that journey.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just going to share a personal story that that I shared with many of you when we were in our focus groups, that I remember probably being about 13 or 14, and my sweet British grandmother, as we are strolling down the beach, wraps her arms around me and said, "Man, you're getting fat." And that's where it started. And that became the filter through which I heard everything, and the eyes through which I saw everything. And so whether we have gotten here through the hurt of something that somebody has said to us, or our own personal thoughts about our bodies, we are all fellow strugglers. We are all the chief of sinners are sitting up here.
And it preoccupies us, doesn't it? Would you agree with that? We are willing to give it a lot of space in our brains.
Yeah.
And so I have been stunned at how important this is, seemingly, to women across age range, experience, and whatever. So Joy texted me this week and said, "I'm praying for you in the muddy and uncharted waters you're about to enter." And so, come on, we're gonna do it together.
Right. We know that this is a very complex issue, and so what we're doing is we're beginning the conversation. Many of you were here for our sexuality conference, and you know that we called it a conversation about sexuality, and then in the fall, we started with an institute class here where we were actually able to break it out into more of a small group environment. We anticipate doing the same thing with this. So we know that this is just the beginning of the conversation. We are going to get started, but here's where we feel like we need to go for our first session tonight. We feel like this is a battle. This is a war that is being waged on three fronts. Culture is a huge battleground for women with their bodies. And so I know Virginia's done some preparation on that for us. And what do you think about culture?
Well, when you think of your body, you can have some extreme views, but just let me back up historically and tell you that there have been much ink spilt on the importance of the body. For the purposes of our discussion, we're going to talk about body and soul. And for years, the body and soul were thought to be enemies of one another, body being lower. The body was just here to carry around the soul. And we discarded it at death. And so what's really, really important is your soul. And then you get to the other extreme of our culture, is that the body is all that matters. Its needs, what it looks like. And we are willing to spend huge time and energy and money to get it right, because the body is the only thing that matters. So what we want to do, not just tonight, but in the next months and years, as we fold this out, is to develop a strong, thoughtful understanding of the biblical view of our bodies. Jesus didn't just save my soul. He saved my body and soul. And so that's where we're going. What is a biblical view? First of all, is that what I just said. We're integrated human beings. We're entwined, body and soul. That's the way God made us. It's the place of our presence. You know I'm here because you see my body. It's a place of our consciousness. You're sitting there thinking. You're conscious here. That's why I know I'm here. Okay? It was created by God. Your body was created by God, and we're going to talk about that in the next session. Just the way it is. It's the temple of the Holy Spirit. Get this. This, your body, our corporate bodies, are where God has chosen to dwell on earth. But we're not our own. And so we are to learn to steward our bodies before God. And that's another thing that we're going to talk about this weekend. And we're going to have a renovation of these bodies one day. But we will be embodied forever. We won't be just floating souls around. We will have a resurrection body. One of the things I think we need to think about is Jesus embodied, God embodied in Jesus. That's got to say something about the goodness of our bodies. Can you imagine him being crafted in Mary's womb? Can you imagine him as a preschooler, a teenager, without sin? He walked and he slept and he ate. He had friends. He got tired. He got hungry. He felt pain. He shared our journey. Hebrews talks about that we have a high priest that knows where we are as embodied people. So that leaves us in no doubt that our bodies are good. So we need a spirituality that honors our bodies and can inform us how to navigate this culture. And that's what I'm really going to talk about. But wait, let me get going. How many of you are under 25? Wow. God bless you. You're right in the midst of it, aren't you? Full force. How many of you have children that are teenagers or in their 20s? Oh, boy. Bless you. The cult, the beauty cult of our culture now, and it is a cult. It is worshipped. Is unprecedented. I really think that. And anything that I have ever seen. It is a creation of an image of an ideal beauty, perfection. And it holds us up. Even feminists don't like this. Have you ever heard of Naomi Wolf's The Beauty Myth? She's saying women have made all these advancements, and they're only really valued by what they're looking at, what we're looking at in them. So our culture has magnified the physical. You saw it up here, didn't you? If I ask you to think of one thing that you like about your body, or one thing, let me ask you it this way, one thing that you would change about your body. Got it, everybody? How many of you picked something about the way you look? Mm-hmm. How many pick something about the way you function, the way you work? You get there when you get older, because you don't work so well sometimes. But we're consumed about what we look like. We're infected by it, really. And we're bought into that the most important thing about us is the way we look. In fact, we are the way we look, mm-hmm. don't you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I agree. Our value is equated to our looks.
That's right. Beauty equals satisfaction. Beauty equals value. Beauty equals power and control and acceptance. And what is the look now? You know what the look is? Thin. You just can't get too thin. And yet you have to be curvy.
Yeah, here are three slogans that we hear on a regular basis. Thin is in, real women have curves, and strong is the new skinny. And you're going to not fit into at least one of those categories. Right?
And the problem is the image is not real. It doesn't exist. The media has produced these airbrushed, photocopied women. You know, they can slim them down or plump them up. Do you realize that we in our lifetime will spend 3 years of our lives bombarded by commercial advertisements? It's relentless, isn't it? But it's insidious in the way it gets into our souls, and we begin to compare ourselves with that ideal, I think.
How many of you guys have seen the Dove video where they show the airbrush and the model being made up? Okay, there are others out there that if you will watch them, that one's not even so bad because they're doing her hair and maybe they lengthen her neck a little bit. But I have watched videos of them taking a belly button and moving it 2 inches, of them shaving fat off of or flesh off of legs, taking one eyebrow and mirroring it, just completely removing it and moving it onto the other side. They are completely manufactured images that we're looking at.
Cindy Crawford, the model, saw one of her copies. And she said, man, I wish I looked like Cindy Crawford. You see, it doesn't exist. It's manufactured. And what it's created is a dissatisfaction with our bodies. It's epidemic. It's estimated that 60% of high school students are dissatisfied, unhappy about the way they look. It ramps up to 80% in college. And it sort of stays at that level for a long time. And the lies that we buy into and the tapes that we run in our heads, like, I'm not thin enough, I'm not tall enough, I'm too tall, I'm not curvy enough, I'm too curvy, I'm not pretty enough, I'm not hot enough. And basically, what we are really feeling is, I'm not enough. Mm-hmm. We don't measure up. We fall so far short of that ideal that is constructed, manufactured, not real. And the foundation of what this is all about is profit, money. And it's targeting the ads for these. In fact, I just saw one in an office this week. It said, new look, new life. And they're targeting 15 to 30-year-olds. And they're infiltrating childhood. Have you noticed that? Let me give you these statistics. This is really, really troubling. 42% of first grade girls, these are six-year-olds, want to be thinner. Ramp it up to fourth grade, these are 10-year-olds, 80% feel like they need to go on a diet. It's not just issues of weight, it is their whole persona. And what we're seeing now, it's incredible to me, is a total sexualization of our culture. that's extending down into childhood. Do you know Victoria's Secret sells, I am told, thongs for tweens, padded bras for children 8 and up? There's something terribly wrong with a culture that does that. And even a feminist said that our culture is becoming pornified. You look at Calvin Klein ads or Abercrombie ads, and they're using 11 and 12 and 13-year-old models. We need to be stunned, and we need to be saddened, and we need to see ourselves, all of us, buying into this beauty cult. It's a snowflake analogy. It's like you're hit with one snowflake, no big deal. But if you don't know what that snowflake is, you're going to be neck deep in a little while. It adds up. The bottom line is idolatry. Idols are agents of control. They take, they don't give. It preoccupies us. And we really care more about changing our body and what other people think of us than we care about what God thinks of us at times. So that's our situation. But you know, excuse me.
No, go ahead.
But you know, it's buying into a God-given desire. You were made to want beauty. There's nothing wrong with wanting beauty. It's God-given. It's part of God's glory. Just think about the natural world and its beauty. A sunset, the power of the ocean, the night sky, whatever. Don't you have a sense of transcendence when you're in the presence of that kind of beauty? It's God-given. It nourishes us. We drink it in. We even use metaphors about that. It's breathtaking. It hits us viscerally. And so, hear us saying there is nothing wrong with wanting to be beautiful. How many of you want to be beautiful? Pretty, attractive. Maybe you think you already are. No, I'm kidding. There's nothing wrong with that desire. It's not shallow to want to be beautiful. But God wants to give us a much larger vision of that. Much larger vision of that. You ever said so-and-so is such a beautiful person? You're talking about her features? Are you talking about her measurements? It's a person that is attractive more than her physically crafted body is. A person that is generous and gracious and welcoming, that isn't all about herself, that is outward focused in people. We call these people beautiful. And I think really, and I'm not just talking about, oh, we're going to tell you now, you're inwardly beautiful, so just relax. God values our outward and our inward beauty. Mm-hmm. And he wants us to get a vision for that. And really, that's what we're looking for. You even listen to these people on TV talking about wanting to find a mate. And the women will say, what I really want is my soulmate. They want to be valued in total. Can I have the McDonald quote on a slide? Okay, can you read it? I would rather be what God chose to make me than the most glorious creature I could think of. For to have been thought about, to be born in God's thought, then made by God, is the dearest, grandest, most precious thing in all thinking. Mm. We need to understand that we are different because God made us that way. Mm. He created us, and we're in a culture of you meet an ideal, that's it, that devalues uniqueness. Judy Garland, that great theologian, said, be a first-rate version of yourself, not a second-rate version of anybody else. I think that's what we're going to talk about.
Yeah. Hey, can you put your watch down so we can see what time it is? I'm sorry.
Okay.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Here's another area that we think that we're fighting the battle. We're not just fighting culture. There are people who will say that it's all culture's fault, it's all media's fault, but there are other areas that this battle is being fought as well. This is a spiritual battle. This, we are convinced, just in our last meeting this week, Virginia and I both sat and were convinced that this area is the devil's playground. And so here's what we think about this. God created us to be a source of delight, to be a source of beauty, and it reflects his glory. And unique and distinct and individual ways. And the devil hates that. He hates anything that reflects the image of God. We've got a slide for 1 Peter. Peter said, stay alert. Watch out for your great enemy, the devil. He prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. He wants to destroy and devour anything that remotely resembles the image of God. And if he can get us preoccupied and distracted, if he can get us confused, to distort beauty, anything that he can do to wrap us up within ourselves, playing on our own vulnerabilities, our own desires to be beautiful, our own desires to be delighted in. And those are good, God-given desires. But if he can twist and distort those to where we are absolutely robbed of our power to reflect the image of God in the unique and distinct ways in which he's created us. And so he will use everything he can to distort the beauty that God has created in each one of us. I love this C.S. Lewis quote that I read in the Screwtape Letters. How many of you guys have read the Screwtape Letters? It is, I went back through it for this conference, and I was amazed at how much of it actually related to this particular topic and he wasn't always talking about body or body image or anything like that, but it was so relevant. But this one particular quote, Lewis says, all extremes except extreme devotion to God are to be encouraged. And so it doesn't matter if I'm extremely religious and spiritual and I have negated the value of my body. And it doesn't matter if I am extremely focused on my body and my physicality and making it beautiful and shaping it in the image that I want. Either extreme, the devil is fine with, as long as I am not giving my extreme devotion to the Lord. And he uses our own vulnerabilities to tempt us to sin, and we open the door for him in that. And so one of the things that we want to talk about is how we play into this battle, how we are a battleground as well. And what we have found is that we're asking all the wrong questions. We have sent you home with in your booklets. There's a handout with some questions to help you we're asking the wrong questions. We're saying, okay, well, what's the latest fashion? And what color should my hair be? And what's the latest trend diet? And what's the latest trend exercise? And, you know, how do I need to make myself fit the mold? And we're not looking at the heart of the issue that's driving us to do all of these things. And so we want to talk a little bit about where we fight this battle for within ourselves. So what we would say is that there are some core issues that we have found with regard to beauty and body image and issues of the body. And the first one is discontent. We are so discontented with ourselves. We are restless and we desire something other than what God has given us. And we can go to Genesis 2 in the story of Eve and Satan tempting her with the fruit. And you can go to that story, and God has given Adam and Eve this bountiful, beautiful, lush garden with everything they could ask for. And he's withheld only one thing. And Satan goes to that vulnerability in Eve with this one thing that God has withheld, and for good reason, because we all know how that story ends. And he plays on that vulnerability, and Eve is discontent. She sees what God is withholding from her, and she sets her eyes on it, and she determines that she's going to step outside of the bounds that God had created to protect. And she reaches for the fruit. She becomes autonomous and determines that she will choose her own path. She will determine what she does. And so she reaches for the fruit. And so this, we've got a book out in the Resource Center by Melissa Kruger. It's called The Envy of Eve. And it's a good book. It's a good book on envy. We did enjoy it. And she has a quote where she said, "A covetous heart pines away, never satisfied, always wanting more." And don't you think that that's how we kind of are with our bodies? We're just never satisfied. We always want something more. So whether it's, I wish that I could be a runner. That's my thing. I would love to be a runner. I hate running. Why do I want to be a runner? Yes. Why do I want to be a runner? Or maybe I wish that I were 5'7" and had long legs. When we sat down in this chair this week, I didn't have heels on, and I sat down and my feet didn't touch the floor. And I was swinging my legs back and forth, and so they promised me they'd give me two pillows so my feet would touch the floor. We always want something, the one thing that we don't have, and we're restless until we get it. Envy is another core issue for us. I look out and I see something that you have, and I determine that I want what you've got, not what I've got. What I've got isn't good enough now. I have to have what you have. And I can't celebrate the beauty of another woman because I feel marginalized by it. I feel less than. If I look out and you're beautiful, then I think I'm less beautiful. And that creates this comparison and competition between us as women that paralyzes us in our service and our love to one another, because it's this one-upmanship. I'm either coming up on the short end of the stick, and so I'm despairing, or I come up feeling like I'm better than, and so then I'm tempted to pride. And so envy is a vicious beast within us, this core issue that is driving us and propelling us forward to do terrible things to our bodies. And we'll talk about the abuses of the body later on. We're also jealous. And Virginia gave a really good distinction in between envy and jealousy. Envy is sorrow over what others have that we don't, and jealousy is fear of losing what we have. And so whether we are, and some of you answered in your surveys when we sent them out, some of the issues that make you feel bad about your bodies are your younger teenage daughters. And so we look at what we're losing and what they have, and we become jealous over that. We look at the young college girls that are coming up behind us, and we don't look like that anymore. And we become jealous. It's downhill after 40. I feel it.
Wait a minute. Not so much.
Not so much.
I'll talk about that later.
And ultimately, we end up just preoccupied with ourselves. We believe that women are powerful, that the Lord has equipped us to be a force for good, to be a strength, a life-giving, load-bearing support to those in our lives. But when we are so preoccupied with ourselves that we are not free to move in and engage others, we either become self-protective and withdraw, or we become self-promoting and we want to one-up whoever we're with. And I know for me, there have been plenty of times that I have been super uncomfortable in something that I'm wearing, or maybe I've got a big pimple on the end of my nose, whatever it is, and I can be so preoccupied with what is going on with my body that I can't even hear or see what's going on in the room. I can't even engage you. You could be having a nervous breakdown, and if I am so turned in on myself, I'm not free to love, and I'm not free to serve, and I'm not free to engage. And these are the ways in which these are core issues that the devil will seize upon as an opportunity to disempower us and to destroy the image of God within us. And ultimately, it comes down to proud unbelief. If you have, if you've come up through our children's ministry, that is something that we talk about a lot, proud unbelief. And that's what we see in the garden. When Eve stepped out from God's authority in pride, and she took the apple, or the fruit, rather, doubting in the goodness of God. And so we've got a slide from the book of Isaiah, chapter 45, and we're going to read that. What sorrow awaits those who argue with their creator? Does a clay pot argue with its maker? Does the clay dispute with the one who shapes it, saying, "Stop, you're doing it wrong"? Does the pot exclaim, "How clumsy can you be? How terrible it would be if a newborn said to its father, 'Why was I born?' Or if it said to its mother, 'Why did you make me this way?' This is what the Lord says, the Holy One of Israel and your Creator. Do you question what I do for my children? Do you give me orders about the work of my hands? I am the one who made the earth and created people to live on it. With my hands, I stretched out the heavens, and all the stars are at my command." and we argue and we battle with God and with ourselves over the way we're made, and we doubt in his goodness. And so in our proud unbelief, we determine that we are going to create our own image, that we are going to do what God didn't. We're going to seek what God didn't give. We're going to reach out for what we feel has been withheld from us. Would you agree?
Absolutely.
So we see a lack of belief in the goodness of God at some of the core of our body issues. We see a sense of entitlement and expectation. We think we know how we should look. And we're mad. We're throwing a temper tantrum that we don't look the way we think we should look. We feel entitled to it. We have a lack of gratitude. And ultimately, we become autonomous and we decide that we are going to choose our own path. And then it comes to shame.
Well, we've talked about culture. We've talked about the devil and his lies. And we've talked about our own sin. But wherever the course comes, we end up with a sense of shame.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what is shame? It's deep and it's primal and it's hard to get a hold of. One girl said she just felt like a glob of unworthiness. It's a weighty, vague sense of I don't measure up, and it's personal. Psychologically, we can look at guilt and say that it's feeling bad over something we've done.
Mm.
Shame is feeling bad about who we are. And where did it come from? I'm going to go back to the garden, too. That's where we always go back. God had just introduced Adam and Eve. Wouldn't you like a replay of that? I just would love a replay of that. And Adam's response was, bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh. This is what he'd been looking for. There was oneness and wholeness and trust and acceptance. And at the end of chapter 2, there's a verse that says, and the man and woman were naked, and they were not ashamed. Did you hear that?
Mm.
No shame. There was a lack of self-consciousness. Totally. There was an absolute willingness to be vulnerable. They didn't even have a definition for the pain of being vulnerable. They had delight and joy and freedom. And this just wasn't about physical intimacy. This was about the union that God had given, the calling that he had given them. And then you get to chapter 3, and by the way, it is chapter 3, when Eve gets messed up.
Oh, sorry. Thanks.
We both said two.
Yep.
It's three. And we see something else happening. And by the way, three is not about totally body issues. It's about the rebellion of man against God.
Mm-hmm.
The consequences and the rescue plan. But in those consequences, we see after they had disobeyed God, that everything changed. They were afraid. The barriers were there. There was distrust. There was incredible self-consciousness to the point that what do? They hid. That sounds like shame.
Mm.
And they tried to cover themselves. They used fig leaves, which wilt and dry and crumble. But that's what we're doing in buying into the culture of the world, to hide this shame that we don't measure up. Mm-hmm. We're seeking the ideal. And there's a beautiful verse in the third chapter that God, in dealing with them, made them, it was the first sacrifice, made them clothing of skin. He wanted to cover and provide that. And really that chapter is about a promise of one that was to come that would provide a total and once for all covering for our guilt. I'm talking about Jesus. And although our shame is not healed completely, we struggle with it, he comes into our mess and he helps us deal with it. And he brings us to another SH word, and I love it, shalom. Mm. And I didn't just pick it because it was SH. It's a word used about 250 times in the Old Testament, and it is translated peace, but it's really a deeper, more broader, fuller sense of wholeness and integrity. It's the way, it's what is, it fits. It is the way the world is supposed to be. And it was used of Israel about wanting to find shalom, wanting to find peace, politically and whatever. But there's a wonderful verse in the Old Testament, Isaiah 53, about the prophecy of the Messiah and the death of Jesus. And it has a phrase, he was beaten, he was crushed to make us whole, to bring us peace. And I believe he's offering that to us in this area. So how do we get there? We get there inch by inch. It's such a journey. We're not going to have a one-time commitment tonight and all your body issues will be settled. It is such a process. And what has to happen is not for you to make new resolves. Mm. We have to change the way we think. We have had an avalanche of the world culture and from the devil and from our own sinful hearts of false beauty. Mm. And we need to change the way we think. Romans 12:2, listen to this. Don't copy the behaviors and customs of this world, but let God transform you into a new person by changing the way you think. Then you will learn to know God's will for you, which is good and pleasing. Did you get that? One translation says, don't let the world squeeze you into its mold. Hmm. That's pretty appropriate. And we have to start thinking differently and changing our minds. Do you know neuroscience tells us that when we think a certain way enough, we get a rut, a groove, and we keep falling back into that? Do you know the tapes that you play all over and over and over about the way you look? So we're going to have to reprogram those neural pathways by the grace and the power of God to see how he sees us. Is that where we want to end tonight?
Yeah,
We're right on time.
So Kim is going to...
Can I read one more quote?
Yeah.
Are we right on time?
We're right on time.
I'll read real fast. Because this is... When I read this, I think, oh, Lord, that is me. Listen to it, okay? We'll end here. The grace of God comes to us in our scrambled spiritual disorder. Do you relate to that? In our mangled inner mess. And he accepts us. He accepts us totally as the bodily and spiritual stew that is us. Hmm. We are accepted in our most fantastic contradictions. We are accepted. The fear of shame is being rejected.
Mm.
Grace heals us by the unconditional acceptance of our God.